जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिधर धारी, जय गोपी जन वल्लभा गिरिधर धारी, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन, यशोदनन्दन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीर वनचारी, यमुना तीर वनचारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव राधा माधव श्री राधे, जय राधा श्याम सुंदर राधा श्याम सुंदर श्री राधे, जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी जय किशोर किशोरी, जय जय प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद प्रभुपाद, जय श्रील प्रभुपाद, जय 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 गुरुदेव गुरुदेव गुरुदेव, जय जय गुरुदेव, जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्रजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमान हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय, श्रील भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती ठाकुर की जय, श्री श्री गौरनिताय की जय, जगन्नाथ बलदेव सुभद्र महारानी की जय, श्री श्री किशोर किशोरी की जय, वैष्णव भक्तवृंद की जय, ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय, अग्लिष्ट श्री गुरु श्री गौरंग अग्लिष्ट श्री प्रभुपाद। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim saraswatim vyasam tato jayam mudirayet nashta praesha badreshu nityam bhagavat sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki sada sevya srimad bhagavati kata yasya shravana matrena harishchitam samashrayet paramananda pataya prema varshaksharayate Sarvada sarva sevyaya Shri Krishnaya namostime sarva vedanta saram hi Shri Bhagavatam ishyate tatra samrita triptasya nanyatra shadrati kochit. Hare Krishna, good morning. So today we're reading from the 10th canto again, and I'm pretty excited because we're moving into a really, really awesome chapter. We've moved into this really amazing chapter about Govardhan. And about Krishna lifting Govardhan. And there are so many different angles and so many kind of perspectives and lines of vision that one can view this pastime with that our acharyas have spoken about. And so I'm just really excited to be in this particular place in the Bhagavatam. So today we're doing text 5, which actually has two lines. Udasino rivadvarja Atmavatsu hriduchyate Udasino rivadvarja Atmavatsu hriduchyate. Please chant. Udasino rivatvarja Atmavatsu hrit uchyate. Udasino rivatvarja Atmavatsu hrit uchyate. And the word for word, udasinaha, one who is indifferent, arivat, just like an enemy, varjaha, is to be avoided, atmavat, like one's own self, suhrit, a friend, uchyate, is said to be, in the translation, one who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. And the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Even if Nanda Maharaj did not see friends, enemies, and neutral parties as entirely equal, Lord Krishna, being Nanda Maharaj's son, was certainly a most trustworthy friend and should therefore not be left out of intimate discussions. In other words, Nanda Maharaj might have thought that as a householder, he could not act on the highest saintly platform, and thus Lord Krishna furnished additional reasons why his father should trust him and reveal the entire purpose of the sacrifice. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, Nanda Maharaj stood silent, doubting his position of parental aloofness, since Gargamuni had predicted that his son would be equal to Narayan in his qualities, and the young boy had already conquered and killed many powerful demons. Om Agyana Timinandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitangscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye Namaum Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale, Srimate Bhakti Vedanta, Swami Niti Namine, Namaste Saraswate Deve, Gauravani Pracharine, Nidavishesha Shunyavadi, Paschatyadesha Tarine, Vanchakalpatadubhyascha, Kripa Sindhu Bhavacha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, I'll just reread the translation. One who is neutral may be avoided like an enemy, but a friend should be considered like one's own self. So Krishna here, he's speaking to Nanda Maharaj, because just after the pastime of the yogic brahmanas and their wives, Krishna then saw Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men in that same place, preparing to do Indra Yaga, preparing to do a yagya to Indra for the rains, because they're farmers. And farmers, it's part of Vedic culture. They worship the clouds. They worship Indra because he sends the water, because that's where the crops come from. It's where the grass that the cows eat comes from. So it's a natural part of cowherd society. It's part of the Vedic paradigm to pay respect to your superiors. The Vedas actually, that's the way they instruct one to ultimately take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is they always have a system, no matter where you are, even if you're the most degraded person, there's a system by which respecting the people that are above you, your consciousness can be raised through that culture of respect, and then you can ultimately find that if I'm intelligent, I want to serve the best man. As Srila Prabhupada would say, an intelligent servant would look for the best person to serve. He looks for a fit master. And then naturally come and say, Bhagavan, he's the person that I should serve. So because Vraj is a Vedic village, they follow Dharma, they follow everything that they're supposed to. Even though Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parichaja, give everything up, it doesn't mean that when you surrender to Krishna that it's just anarchy. Actually, if we look at all the places that Krishna, in one way we can say that he incarnates into, but in the other way, these are also eternal places. Dwarka is an eternal place. Vraj is an eternal place. Ayodhya is an eternal place. All of these wonderful cultural aspects are also there because they're stimulants for real love and they're stimulants for the harmony that is required to create very, very strong relationships. And so we see that these things are also there. In Vraj, they follow their dharma, they do. Even in Vraj, it's very special because they're in place, particularly so Madhura Ras can take place in its highest element, because by breaking those rules, it creates a certain special flavor between Krishna and the gopis. So we see these things, they ultimately serve some purpose. And there, you can look at that from many, many different angles. There are many purposes that are fulfilled. So Krishna has met his father, and he's seen that he's getting ready to perform this Indra Yagya. And he's seen this before, our acharyas say. Every year they do this. It's common. It's part of the culture. But this time, Krishna had an idea. And he thought, we're going to do something a little differently this time. And so he went to his father, and he started to be a little bit talkative, because he's an 8-year-old boy, and I don't know, I'm sure we've all hung out with an 8-year-old boy before. They're a bit talkative. I remember being an 8-year-old boy, and yeah, it's less like blah, 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 over. You're just speaking. The 8-year-old boys, 5-year-old boys, young children, they just speak. It's they just go and why? The famous question, why? But why? We're in the car. Are we there yet? But are we there? No, are we there yet? 2 minutes later, are we there yet? Children, they like to speak. And so Krishna, he went to his father and he started speaking. But because he's Krishna, he started speaking some really amazing things. At first, his father just thought, we're busy. Because in Vraj, it's a special leela. They don't know he's God. Sometimes they get some sneaking suspicion, as is referred to in the purport here, but it quickly gets resolved, as we'll see after this chapter, after this yajna. The cowherd men, they approach Nanda Maharaj with the same doubt Nanda Maharaj is kind of having right now. And Nanda Maharaj gives a very, very wonderful answer. But, so first Nanda Maharaj thought, Krishna, I don't have time right now. This is very important what we do. This is our entire livelihood. If we don't do this, you're not going to drink any milk. Nothing is, this is very important. And so he kind of just tried to not ignore Krishna, but he thought, this is just a child speaking and he's just going to keep speaking and I don't have time for this. But then Krishna started saying amazing things. He started speaking like a learned Brahmana, not an 8-year-old boy. He started asking questions about the yajna and asking, well, who is the yajna for and who is who carries out the yajna, who is doing the yajna in a proper way. He asked, is this yajna from family tradition or is it a Vedic yajna? He asked many, many very compelling questions to Nanda Maharaj. And so in that way, he captured Nanda Maharaj's attention. And even doubting this, this is where the doubt came in. Nanda Maharaj thought, how is it that this little boy knows so much? How is an 8-year-old boy asking these questions and speaking so eloquently? He never speaks like this. It's normally 8-year-old boy stuff. How is my Krishna speaking like this? And so he started to think, Garga Rishi, he did say he would be just like Narayan. What did that exactly mean? And so he had this little doubt. And then he started to give Krishna answers. Because Krishna then told him, because he sensed the doubt, he said, Father, it's fair if you're indifferent to someone who is neutral. Because someone who's neutral can be regarded like an enemy, because they're not on your side. They may not be saying, I'm against you. But if someone's neutral, they're on the fence. They're not on your side. They're not on your side. So you should regard them like an enemy. You shouldn't trust them with the depths of your heart. This actually it's substantiated by a wonderful quote from Rupa Goswami in his treatise on the relationships of the higher rasas, that one should disregard an enemy, or someone who's neutral like an enemy. But Krishna says, someone who is Suhrit, someone who's a friend, you have no reason to fear them. You have no reason to disregard them. And I'm your son. What to speak of a friend? If your friend comes to you and asks you for something, you should certainly reciprocate with him. But I'm your son. So you should tell me all these things. Tell me about this yajna that you're doing. What is going on here? What is this thing? And so Nanda Maharaj, because he's a simple cowherd man, he doesn't really, he's not a Vedic Brahmana, he's not vastly learned in the Vedas, he takes care of the cows. Even today in India, Gwalas, or cowherd people, they're regarded as quite low people. The cows are the residents of all the demigods, but the people who take care of them, they're not really considered very advanced people. They're considered a bit backwards and they're villagers and, you know, that it's like that. And so Nanda Maharaj, he doesn't know the Vedas in depth and he doesn't know the Udgata and all of these things and the yajnas. Therefore, he's going to the Brahmanas and saying, please do this sacrifice to Indra. And so he just tells Krishna, this is some tradition that we've been doing since I can remember. My father did it and I'm doing it, and it's an ancient family tradition. It's very important that we do this because Indra gives the rain and the cows eat the grass and we subsist on milk and we subsist by trading milk, so this is something that we have to do. And he explains a little more to the best of his knowledge. And then Krishna, he says, this isn't proper. The 8-year-old boy He goes, Father, this is wrong, what you're doing. You shouldn't do this. It's a family tradition. It's not even necessarily Vedic. What? We shouldn't do this. And then Krishna does an amazing thing. He speaks atheism. He starts to speak karma mimamsa philosophy, as our acharyas point out. And he starts to say things like, actually, Indra is dependent on the rain. It's not actually Indra who sends the rain. Indra is dependent on the rain. And the rain is dependent on Rajagun, the mode of passion. Rain comes from the mode of passion. And ultimately, the mode of passion, it's a result of the aggregate of karma that people have accrued. And so actually, neither Indra nor the rain, none of these things should be worshipped. Karma is the ultimate end of everything, because by that aggregate of karma, these things take place. So why are we even doing this? This is what he says. He speaks it very compellingly as well. He speaks it like a real mimamsaka, like somebody who really knows this philosophy, who spent their entire life studying it. And so these simple coward men, first they're just entertained that Krishna's speaking like that. It's like their jaws drop, because this 8-year-old boy who normally prattles on about nonsense and everyone, he's killing demons and doing so many things. You know, it's the same stuff that young boys do. Oh, I went and I was Superman, Daddy. You know, that so many crazy stories that he tells. Now he's speaking perfect Vedic philosophy. He's speaking one of the Sudarshans of Vedic philosophy. What is this? And then they become compelled because of Krishna's sweetness and because of the Lila Shakti. And he keeps speaking. And they agree. Somehow or other, they listen because it's Krishna. And he's compelled them. And then we come to the action. Because then Krishna says, let's worship Govardhan. Why should we worship Indra? Actually, because he switches his philosophy. He says, Govardhan is the one who provides the grasses. And Govardhan provides the waterfalls. He says, this Indra, he's so foolish. If he's sending the rain, you say he's sending the rain. Why does he send rain over the ocean, Father? If he's so intelligent. You've seen storm clouds over the ocean before. You've made pilgrimages to the ocean. Gujarat is just a couple hundred miles east. Yeah, east of Vrindavan. They've been there before. They went to Ambika Kalna. They've done these things. So he says, Father, you've seen rain clouds over the ocean pouring gallons of water, gallons of rain, hundreds of gallons, so much water pouring into the ocean. So this Mahendra, our acharyas say, he says, Mahendra, this great Indra. Krishna says this very sarcastically, our acharyas say. He's so intelligent, and he pours water into the ocean. Don't worship this person. He's a fool. Worship Govardhan. Govardhan is the real support of all of Vraj. Govardhan gives grass to the cows. He gives me and my friends places to play. He provides waterfalls. He provides everything that we need. We get roots from Govardhan. We get wood to burn for our fire. Everything comes from Govardhan. So worship Govardhan. We should have a festival. Stop this yagya. Because Nandamara says, okay, I like what you're saying. We'll do it after we do Indra yagya. We'll do a yagya to Govardhan. And Krishna says, no. Don't worship this Indra. Worship Govardhan. And so somehow or other they do it. It's inconceivable. So many inconceivable things happen in Vraj. They listen against their better judgment, against their understanding of this very important tradition. They just do it. They're compelled by Krishna's sweetness and his words and the Lila Shakti. And so they decide, okay, we're not going to worship Indra. Let's worship Govardhan. And so they begin to worship Govardhan. Now, the amazing thing here is the way Krishna spoke, at least in this aspect, because there are so many compartments in this Lila. It's hard to zero in and not run into a tangent and speak about a different one, because it's just there's so much here that Krishna is showing us, that the Bhagavatam is showing us. But what I'd like to highlight here, because we're in the section where Krishna is speaking very compellingly to Nanda Maharaj is the way Krishna spoke and why and how our acharyas have reacted to that speech and what that means for us. Because it's very important to understand this. Because Krishna, he's Bhagavan. Not only is he Bhagavan, because Ram is also Bhagavan, Narasimhadev is also Bhagavan, Vishnu is also Bhagavan, but Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the original fountainhead of all of the other Bhagavans. They're not other Bhagavans in a strict sense, but he is where all the avatars come from. Prabhupada would say, he is the original candle. You may have 100 candles lined up, and they may all be the exact same size, and they have the same flame, and you can't see the difference. They give the same amount of light, but there's one candle that lit all of those candles. The original candle that had the original flame, this is Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Ete chamsha kala pumsa Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original fountainhead of all the amshas and all the kalas, all of the different portions of Godhead. And so, this is interesting because he often defies what we would think the original God would do. This is actually part of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, is learning what it means that Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan. Because most people's conception of the original God is Narayan. Even people in other religions, they may not say, oh, it's Narayan, it's Vishnu, but their conception matches who Narayan is. God in heaven, who can do no wrong, who is always, he's Satyam, he's everything he says is perfect truth. Everything he does is perfect truth. There are no mistakes. He's worshipped by everybody. He's obviously God. And so this is at most people's conception of Bhagavan and most people's conception of the original Bhagavan. In the Vedic canon, it's even generally understood that Vaikuntha is the origin of all the avatars and Krishna is just one of his avatars. And so this is very prevalent. But Krishna is Swayam Bhagavan, and a lot of people have a lot of trouble wrapping their head around this because Krishna does a lot of unorthodox things. He lies. He cheats. He steals. He goes and hangs out with unmarried women. He does a lot of really crazy things. Cheating and lying. I mean, he orchestrates a crazy plan to get Yudhishthira, who's Dharmaraj, to lie on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. And then Yudhishthira, he won't actually lie. So he speaks this supposed lie. Ashwatthama is dead! Because they needed Ashwatthama to die for Dronacharya to become bewildered so that they could actually kill Dronacharya. But they couldn't kill Ashwatthama. And so they had Yudhishthira lie. Krishna went to him and he said, you just say Ashwatthama is dead and you announce it, and then Dronacharya will become bewildered enough that we can strike him down. And Yudhishthira, he couldn't imagine doing this because he's Dharmaraj. He is Yamaraj incarnate. He is literally the personality of rules and truthfulness. That's who Yudhishthira is. He's never made a mistake. He's made mistakes, but he's never told a lie. And he's never gone against his principles. And yet, his worshipable deity and one of his best friends, Krishna, is telling him now, just lie. We'll fix this. No problem. Just lie. And so he has this conniption. And so finally he goes, Ashwatthama, the elephant, is dead. And he whispers the elephant because there's an elephant named Ashwatthama that he died right then. And so in this way, Dharmaraj didn't actually have to lie. But Krishna came up with this plan, this sidewindy, not very dharmic, untruthful plan that, hey, Yudhishthira, you just say this and everything will work out. With Jarasandha, when Jarasandha needed to be defeated, and they knew they couldn't approach him because in his own kingdom, his armies were just too many. Krishna said, no problem. Arjuna, Bhima, come with me. We'll dress like brahmanas and we'll go beg. The one thing a kshatriya is not allowed to do is to beg. He is the one varna that if he begs, he's no longer a kshatriya. And Krishna said, no problem. Let us go beg. We'll just beg. And then we'll say, we beg you for a fight, because that'll just be the pretense to get us into his kingdom, so we're standing in front of him. And then he won't deny us. So Krishna comes up with all of these sidewindy plans, these sideways, seemingly adharmic, not very nice plans from a moral perspective. He does so many things, and this goes really against the grain of what people would imagine Swayam Bhagavan is doing. And now let's take the current example. Krishna, he's bewildering all of the cowherd men, and he bewilders his father completely by speaking completely atheistic philosophy. There's not a shred of actual Vedic truth in what he's saying. He's taking one of the most antithetical Vedic philosophies of the Sad-Darshans, and he's using that to convince his father to stop doing what he actually should be doing as per Vedic Dharma. This is what's happening. This is what our acharyas say, because the Vedas, they say that you should worship Indra. Nanda Maharaj didn't know, and so he said, it's a family tradition, I think. It's something we've done for a long time. But one acharya points out that actually, no, in the Vedas, and he gives the quote, this and this, this, one should worship Indra. Indra should be worshipped. And it's everywhere in the Vedas, actually. It's quite a common thing. It's such a common thing that actually in Western commentaries on the Vedas, they're still arguing as to whether Indra may be the supreme god or not, as according to the Hindu pantheon, as they say it. So Indra's worshipped so much in the Vedic canon, mostly in Karmakanda, that it's definitely a Vedic injunction that one should worship Indra. And Krishna has come, and he hasn't spoken Bhagavad Dharma. He hasn't spoken a higher Vedic truth than the worship of Indra. He's spoken some atheistic karma is the ultimate thing, and that ultimately there is no controller, and it's Rajagun is controlling the rain. All of these sidewindy, crazy things. And it's just completely wild. And our acharyas, they point it out. They tell us he's speaking mimamsaka philosophy. He's speaking karma mimamsa. This is not true. This is vitandavad, our acharyas say. This is very, very important for us to understand, because our acharyas, they know that the Veda is fixed. The Veda is eternal. If you want knowledge, if you want to go anywhere for knowledge, if you want to actually know the absolute truth, the very first step in knowing the absolute truth is to approach the Vedas. If you don't approach the Vedas, you cannot know the absolute truth. It is not possible. There is no other philosophy, there is no other means in this world to know the absolute truth than through the Vedas. And so even if God himself speaks, if he speaks contrary to the Vedas, that speech is rejected. Now that sounds, what are you saying? This is ridiculous. I've never heard this before. This is the truth. Every acharya has spoken in the same way about this in many, many different places. And Krishna himself, he has shown circumstances like this one where this plays out. In the first canto, when Krishna and Arjuna were chasing after Ashwatthama, to kill Ashwatthama, and they had finally caught him, Krishna told Arjuna, kill Ashwatthama. You kill him now. You have to appease Draupadi. You have to appease Yudhishthir. He's done so many terrible things. You have to make Bhima happy. Kill him now. Just finish him. It's even said that Krishna had anger in his eyes when he said it. And Arjuna, he said, wait, let's bring him back first. Because Arjuna understood the Shastra. He knew Arthashastra very well because he was a Pakashatriya. And so he said, Krishna, no, let's just wait. And then he brought Ashwatthama back with Krishna. And they placed him in front of Draupadi and said, what should we do? You tell us what we should do. He's killed your sons. We'll leave the decision with you. Because Bhima was saying, kill him now. And Krishna even then was saying, kill him now. But Arjuna, he knew the Shastra very well, and he knew that it wasn't so easy. And so then, taking the counsel of everybody there, taking the counsel of Yudhishthir, and ultimately letting Draupadi make the decision in which he said, don't kill him, because I don't want his mother to suffer the way I've suffered. This has to stop somewhere, she says. He doesn't get killed. Because one should never kill a Brahmana. One should never kill the son of a Brahmana, according to the Vedas. Because a Brahmana, he's protecting the Vedas, and he's had so much training poured into him to learn the Vedas, to understand them. And so one should never kill a Brahmana. And Ashwatthama is the son of a Brahmana. And now, but here we have it. We look at the situation. Krishna said, kill him. Don't think, just do. He said, kill him now. And then at the assembly of people, when they were judging what to do, Krishna still was on the side of Bhima thinking, kill him. Then he became neutral. But immediately, he's, finish him. But this was all a test. Krishna was testing Arjuna's intelligence. Arjuna passed the test with flying colors, because he judged everything soberly on the basis of the Shastra. Ashwatthama is actually the next Vyasadev. After this kalpa ends, the 29th Vyasadev, because Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasadev, who wrote the Srimad Bhagavatam, he's the Vyasadev for this age. But for the next age, Ashwatthama is actually the next Vyasadev. He's Chiranjeevi, he's in the Himalayas, he's doing his tapasya to neutralize all the sin he incurred by this horrible act of killing the sons of Draupadi. And once he becomes purified, he will be the next Vyasadev. So he wasn't to be condemned. And if Arjuna had just listened and just said, oh yes, Krishna, you are God and you say, and killed Ashwatthama, that actually wouldn't have pleased Krishna. It wouldn't have made Krishna happy. So Krishna is illustrating here, it's very important that we take shelter of the Shastra. Because Krishna, as I said earlier, he may say and do so many things, but he's given the Vedas, which they never, ever, ever change. They're eternal and they're perfect. Jiva Goswami actually gives one amazing term, because the Tattva Sandarbha, which is the beginning, it's the entry point of his entire exegesis on the Bhagavatam, it begins by explaining that one has to go to the Vedas for knowledge if one wants knowledge. And then it explains that the Vedas aren't so understandable, and so one has to go to the Puranas, because Vyasadeva wrote the purport of the Vedas in the Puranas for people to understand. And then of the Puranas, because the Puranas, they have different conclusions because they're in different gunas, the Srimad Bhagavatam is best. But before that, when substantiating the validity of the Vedas across the board, he gives one amazing term. He says, Anadhi Siddha Sarva Purusha Paramparasu. This is a requirement for something to be called Veda. Anadi. It should have no beginning. It should be just like the Lord, and it should not have come from anything. It just exists. It is. Just like Krishna, the Vedas are eternal. Siddha, perfect. No fault in them whatsoever. Sarva Purusha Paramparasu. And it should be in every single parampara, every lineage where knowledge is delineated, the Veda should be there. This is the Veda. In other words, that perfect knowledge which has no beginning, it should be available to all people at all times. Only the Veda can fulfill this category. Only the Veda can fulfill this criterion. Only Vedic knowledge can do this. Therefore, even when the Lord himself speaks against it, the Shastra shines forth. Therefore, we've heard this Guru Sadhu and Shastra principle, that the Shastra is the emperor among the three. It shines forth as the centerpiece of the checks and balances system. An Acharya and a Guru, they both derive their power from the fact that they know the Shastra. It's very, very important to know. Now, I can give one really nice example for this, which I found very funny when I heard it for the first time. So, Jai Baladev, do you celebrate Buddha Purnim? You do? Do you celebrate Buddha Purnim? Would you? But you don't now. No. Why not? But, I mean, Keshava Jrita, Buddha Sharira, Jai Jagadish Hari. Buddha is Hari. We worship Varahadev. Tomorrow's Varahadev's appearance day. And the next day is Nityananda Trayodashi. And Gaur Purnima is coming up. There's Janmashtami. We worship all the avatars. Mother Krishna Archana, do you worship, do you celebrate Buddha Purnima? You're not in a, that's a good answer. You're not in a traditional line. She said she's not in a traditional line of people who worship Lord Buddha. That's a good answer, because I was going to say why. Why not? The first answer as to why not is because the Vedas say that we shouldn't worship Buddha. The same Vedas that say Buddha is an avatar of Krishna, they also say that these words of Lord Buddha, who is Krishna, they're misleading. And so we shouldn't take any truth to them if we're actually trying to understand the Veda. So the Veda itself tells us we shouldn't celebrate this person in this way. And so therefore we don't. Then, following that, the Acharyas tell us, yes, it's a misleading philosophy. We should not follow it. So even the words of Krishna himself, he comes as Buddha, because the Vedas tell us they're misleading, we take them as misleading. There's no other reason. Otherwise, it would just be speculation. Why not? Why not? It's a beautiful philosophy. Ahimsa is very good. Ahimsa paramo dharmo. It's very, very wonderful. We don't take it because we're told by the Vedas that this is not to be followed. Similarly, our acharyas speak up in this place because why not? If they didn't say, there would be nowhere else to hear it. If they didn't tell us, this is karma mimamsaka philosophy, this is not to be followed, then we could take these verses and these lines and so much could be drawn out of them, and oh, well, Krishna meant like this, and it's very important. And the Mayavadis could come and say, oh, see, even your Krishna, he's speaking like this. He's saying that karma is the ultimate thing, or he's saying that there is no supreme controller. But because the Acharyas, they step in and they say, actually, the Vedas, they are supreme, and what they say goes. And even if Bhagavan speaks against them, we don't accept those words of Bhagavan. Because Bhagavan, he'll never speak against the Vedas truly. Because the Vedas come from him. There is no fault in them. Anadi Siddha. They're eternally and beginninglessly perfect. Now I'll wrap up with one last story, which it solidifies this point very importantly for us as Gaudiya Vaishnavas. Because in the time of Jiva Goswami in Vrindavan, people who were flocking to the brilliance of the Goswamis of Rup Sanatan, Raghunath Das, Jiva, and Raghunath Bhatta, and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, many, many people were flocking to the amazing realizations and understandings. It was like a renaissance in Vaishnavism. The whole world was going through a renaissance at that time because of the renaissance in Vaishnavism that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ushered in. And to this day, there has not been a better time of real deep inquisitive thought on the planet, what to speak of in India. So many, many intelligent people were becoming Gaudiya Vaishnavas. And there's one person who still has a lineage in Vrindavan that is not necessarily considered an Upasampradaya. It's in some gray area because they're not in a parampara as far as the four Vaishnava Sampradayas, but they're respected, and none of our contemporary acharyas or recent acharyas, speaking Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who very much singled out the Upasampradayas, have spoken negatively against them. But there's one Hit Harivamsh, who's the leader of this Sampradaya. He was a student in the school of Jiva Goswami. He went to school in Jiva Goswami's school, the same school that Narottam Das Thakur was in, that Shamananda Pandit was in, that Srinivasacharya was in. He went to this same school. And in this school, as he was learning from Jiva Goswami, he developed a philosophical conception. And he voiced that philosophical conception. He said, actually, if one has a very, very deep realization in reference to Radha and Krishna, and it happens to move against the grain of Vedic knowledge, it happens to disregard some point of the Vedas, it happens to disregard some point in the Bhagavatam, because that thing is higher than what's given in the Bhagavatam, and it's a personal relationship with Radha and Krishna, then that is okay, and it's bona fide. And Jiva Goswami said, no. Krishna will never act against the Vedas. He may speak like that, but Krishna will never do something which goes against the grain of the Vedas. There may be a realization that isn't spoken in the literatures we have in the Vedas. Rupa Goswami has given so many realizations that aren't spoken of directly in the Vedas. All of the rasas and all of the names of the gopis. These things, if you look at all the Puranas, all the names of the gopis are not there. The names of all the Vrajvasis are not in the Veda. So you can realize something that may go further than what is revealed in the Vedas, but you can, if you have a realization that contradicts the Vedas, that realization is bogus. This was Jiva Goswami's stance. And this person hit Harivamsh. He actually left Jiva Goswami's school. Some people say he left, some people say he was kicked out. But by any means, there was a parting of ways over this particular point. That, no, if one is at a certain level, he may be able to have realizations, and then the Vedas aren't so important, and you just kind of, they were a means, and you leave them aside, because that's the ultimate reality. Or, no, Krishna will never go against the grain of the Vedas. And he actually started his own Sampradaya, and that Sampradaya still exists to this day. But it's important to understand this demarcation, because as followers of the Six Goswamis, we stand firmly in the camp that the Vedas are superior. The Vedas, Krishna will never go against the Vedas. And anywhere, our acharyas give extensive commentary to explain his motives behind speaking against them when he does speak against them. In reference to Lord Buddha, he says he was trying to bewilder the atheists. And that's accepted across the board, more or less, unless you're a Buddhist, in which point you don't accept the Vedas anyway. And in this case, the acharyas, they say that Krishna, he was speaking in this way because he wanted to increase the love of the Vrajvasis, and he wanted to facilitate this pastime of worshipping Govardhan, but that we shouldn't take his words in speaking this philosophy as true. And then they say, anywhere else that Krishna does this, anywhere else that Krishna speaks a philosophy that goes against the grain of the Vedas, against the grain of the highest realization of the Vedas, which is bhakti, we should take it in this same way, that we should not accept it, and that it has some ulterior motive in it, and that it's ultimately not true, that Krishna is, he's doing what he's doing. This is Krishna. And so Krishna, he tells Arjuna, I quote this verse a lot, somehow every class I give, I end up quoting this verse, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. Because Krishna also knows this about himself. He knows I'm a trickster. I do these things. I lie. I cheat. So he says, Arjuna, you're my devotee. And one thing I won't lie about is my devotees. And I stand behind the words of my devotees. So he says, you declare it, that anyone who becomes my devotee will never ever meet ill. They'll never be destroyed. They'll never have any actual problems. It's nothing but good for my devotees. He says, you say it, because if you say it, I have to stand behind it. Because I may say something. If I say it, I may not do it. And then he demonstrated that, because he said, I will not fight. And because Bhishma said, I'll make you fight, he fought in the battle of Kurukshetra. Because Krishna's word is fluid. This is actually why Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's realization of the mercy of the holy name being more than Krishna himself. He had this realization because he said the holy name is always there. No matter what, all you have to do is chant it and the holy name will always be there. But Krishna, he may come, he may not come. He does what he likes to do. He's a little bit frivolous sometimes. But the holy name is always there. And so in that way, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said the holy name is more merciful than Krishna. So this was a drop of what we can churn out of this pastime, a very, very preliminary aspect of it, but for me it's quite a compelling thing, because it's very important for us to understand the supremacy of the Vedas, and as Jiva Goswami explains in his Tattva Sandarbha, the resulting supremacy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is Sarva Vedanta Saram Hi. It is the very most essential distillation of all Vedic truth. It's not even just a distillation. It's a purport. It's unpacking the entire meaning of the Vedas. This Bhagavatam is doing that. It is the ripened fruit of Vedic knowledge. Nigama kalpataror ghalitam phalam. This is the highest thing that we can imagine coming in touch with. He is the highest person we can imagine coming in touch with, actually, this Srimad Bhagavatam. But that understanding is incumbent on what understanding what the Srimad Bhagavatam is, where the Srimad Bhagavatam comes from. Why? Why is it Nigama Kalpatura Galitam Phalam? We have to understand these things. Otherwise, it's a book and it was written by this person. Some philosophers, they say, actually, this chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam is an interpolation. And the Brahma Vimohan Leela is also an interpolation. So how do we defend against that? If somebody comes to you and they say, these parts of your book, as far as we've studied, you know, the other parts may be bona fide, but these parts of your book, they seem like they were added later. Other Vaishnav Sampradayas say this, about this Govardhan Leela, the Vallabh Sampradaya, they say, no, it's an interpolation. The Govardhan Leela didn't, no, that's not part of the Bhagavatam, as we know it. The Sri Sampradaya and the Ramanuja Sampradaya, they both say, Brahma Vimohan Leela, probably an interpolation. Madhvacharya didn't comment on the Brahma Vimohan Leela. Ramanujacharya didn't even comment on the Bhagavatam. Some Sri Vaishnavas believe the Bhagavatam itself is an interpolation and was written later, sometime around the time of the Gaudiyas, or maybe, you know, 1300, somewhere like, it's not a Purana. So how do we reconcile this? If we're ever met with this, we may be met with these things as devotees. We're going to interact with people. Life is very long and very strange. It'll take us to many, many different places. And what happens when you run into these people? We have to have faith and understanding. Where does that faith come from? It comes from the Veda. Because the Bhagavatam speaks about, the Puranas, the Kurma Purana, the Narsimha Purana, the Skanda Purana. At least five Puranas, they speak about the Srimad Bhagavatam being the crown of all the Puranas. And they give characteristics. It has the Vritrasura Leela in it. This Bhagavatam has the Vritrasura Leela in it. It has 18,000 verses. So this is our answer to those people that say these chapters must be extrapolations. Because if you take these three chapters out of the Bhagavatam, it no longer has 18,000 verses. And then there's no other book that fills this 18,000 verse criterion that is in five other Puranas. So if we understand all of this, we don't have to understand all of it, but if we understand the perspective and the superiority of the Vedas and we take faith in that, we will see that we're on firm ground. And if we're not, we may be bewildered. There are some devotees in colleges that they're saying, maybe the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is an interpolation. It's a very common thought that because right in the thrust of where the 12th chapter is in the Bhagavad Gita, because it just kind of abruptly introduces the topic of bhakti in a place where jnana is being spoken of very heavily, many scholars are of the opinion that the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita might be a later interpolation, and there are actually only 17 chapters. So we have to understand. Because otherwise, it's our faith that's on the line. And as Prabhupada explained to us, blind faith is not faith at all. In one famous conversation, Prabhupada said, why is Krishna God? And they said, oh, Prabhupada, because you have told us. And he said, that's okay, but that's not enough. I want more. Oh, because Arjuna has said. Okay, but can you give some more? Because so many sages like Vyasadeva and so many other people have said, can you give me more? Prabhupada said, give more, more, more. This isn't enough. And then Prabhupada's ultimate answer was, you have to experience Krishna. You have to experience Krishna consciousness. That experience of Krishna consciousness, it comes on the basis of sambandha, and it comes on the basis of shravana. The first way someone experiences Krishna, Vasudeva Katha Ruchi, is they develop a little taste for hearing about Krishna, which means hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, it means hearing the Vedas. So it's very important that we really take shelter and understand that the Vedas are supreme. What is it? Anadi Siddha Sarva Purusha Paramparasu. They're eternal, they're perfect, and they're the beginning of, and they're available to every lineage of man, demigod, whatever. They're there. This is very, very nice. So I'll stop here. We have about 2 minutes. If we have one question or one comment or one correction, then please, if you saw something nice here, yadatra skalitam kinchit, vidvamsa purayantu tat yatatra soshtavam kinchit tad guru deva me nahi. Any faults that you saw, please correct them. And anything that you saw that was nice, tad guru deva me nahi. It's my guru's, it's not mine.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Hi.
Very nice class. You brought up a lot of relevant points. I would like to spend more than 2 minutes, or I would like you to spend more than 2 minutes, but if you like. But you were mentioning, Krishna doesn't speak in contradiction of the Vedas, and you were also mentioning a Buddha avatar.
I didn't say he doesn't speak in contradiction of the Vedas. He's doing it here. He said he won't act, and he won't carry something out that's actually in contradiction of the Vedas. He may speak so many things.
Yes, absolutely. So he wouldn't act in contradiction to the Vedas. So my point remains the same and goes along those lines. You also mentioned a Buddha avatar. So there's a verse in the sixth canto, chapter 8, verse 19. This chapter is entitled The Narayana Kavacha, and Vishwarupa, he's helping demigods to protect themselves against the demons. And he basically describes in the chapter, we need all the help we could get. Just like if you want to build a tower, you need more than one person. So he's saying, if we want to build our character, we need all the help we could get. So he says, he tells the demigods, pray to Narsimhadev, pray to Vamana. He even says, pray to Buddha. In this verse, when he mentions to pray to Buddha, it's not in contradiction of your class. He basically says, let's pray to Buddha to never contradict the Vedas, actually. And etc. So you can read that verse. It's from the sixth canto, chapter 8, verse 19. So there's one last point I wanted to bring up, where Daksha, he was criticizing Lord Shiva. You're filthy, you're dirty, you don't follow the Vedas, you don't follow any rules and regulations. So later, Sati criticized our father. She actually says in this pastime that, my dear father, Lord Shiva, he's above the Vedas. There's you can look up that chapter, but basically we see that in the material world, children are taught to follow the rules of the world by their parents. My dear child, do not run a red light. If you run a red light, that's illegal. So when a child sees the police officer, the fire truck, the ambulance run a red light, my dear mother, they're breaking the law. But this is a child's understanding. So Sati says, my dear father, you have a childlike mentality, so you're criticizing Lord Shiva, who has love for all of humanity. So he may do things that's contradictory to the Vedas. So my question is, when we say, we may criticize others for contradicting the Vedas, but actually we don't know who's contradicting the Vedas. So there's a quote, what are some steps we could take? I heard this quote, I was inspired by. What are some steps we could do to really inculcate this quote? It says, nothing will give you greater peace than minding your own business. So what are some steps we could take to mind our own business? Because we actually don't know who's contradicting the Vedas or not, because Krishna's orchestrating many things through many different people.
Our business is to know the truth. And our business is to love Krishna. One way that we love Krishna and we mind our own business is by understanding the Vedas. I actually, ironically, just read this Leela. And so Daksha criticized Lord Shiva, but he was wrong. Lord Shiva doesn't act in contradiction to the Vedas, because the only thing Lord Shiva didn't do is he didn't stand up and he didn't respect Daksha. But Lord Shiva, because he was sitting wrapped in samadhi on Krishna's lotus feet, actually there's an injunction that if one is in a state of trance like that, he's not required to stand up and pay respect to anybody who is lower than the person that he was meditating on. So Daksha was wrong. Lord Shiva did not act against the injunctions of the Vedas. So that's not an issue. Daksha was the one who acted against the injunctions of the Vedas and became proud and so many things, and that's why he got the reaction that he got, and he got his head chopped off by Virabhadra. And so many people who took part in that also were heavily, heavily punished. So the point still stands that we should understand, because my point is not that we should know the Vedas. The only way to know the Vedas, for one, you can't even know all of the Vedas, because even if you're born in a Brahmin family and you learn the Vedas, you only learn one of the four branches because we don't have enough intelligence to memorize them all. That's why it's Vedi. Nobody is Chaturvedi unless you're born in Dwapara Yuga before they were written down. That's why Vyasadeva divided them. That's why you need four priests at a Vedic sacrifice. So there's no question of knowing all the Vedas. But we should understand and have faith in the superiority of the Vedas as a required stepping stone for spiritual life. This is elucidated by Jiva Goswami in Tattva Sandarbha. It's very, very much required. And we can see, for devotees, it becomes very difficult if they start to have doubts. They doubt the Bhagavatam, they doubt the Bhagavad Gita, they doubt what... After 5 years, 10 years, if you don't get the right type of education, you can't be carried very far. It's very important. And it's not such a big topic to understand. It doesn't require years and years and years. It requires 2 or 3, maybe 5 hours of earnestly endeavoring to understand the point. And it's very easy to understand that the Vedas are Shabda Praman, and specifically, they're Apurusheya Shabda. They're Shabda which doesn't come from the mouth of a human being, because Shabda just means heard knowledge. And of the Vedas, the Puranas are very important because they're Vyasadevs, the person who divided the Vedas. They're his commentary on the Vedas, and he knows them best because he's Krishna Dvaipayana Vyasadeva, he's Krishna himself. And of those Puranas, the Bhagavatam is the highest. Most devotees have no idea what I just said. They just know that, oh yes, Bhagavatam is the best. Just like anyone else in any other religion runs around and says, my religion is the best. But we should know why. Our acharyas gave us, it's a science. Prabhupada said it's a science. So we should know. That is minding our own business. Because that is our business. You know? Anyway. If there's anything else, it's 8:34, so we're just 4 minutes over.
One thing my brother says in agreement with your class, one very funny thing he basically says, it reminded me of, he says a very funny point. He says when people are, sharing their points in class, Bhagavatam class, they'll quote Oprah Winfrey, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra. So my brother says, well, did not Queen Kunti have something wonderful to say? Did not Prahlad? So he was like, they have so many wonderful things, and like you said, we lose our faith the more we hear other stuff, because if the more we hear other philosophies, if it's not in harmony with, then we'll lose our faith in the Bhagavatam. And so anyways, it was just appreciation and one funny point reminded me of what my brother said. Anyway,
that's
thank
a
you.
Nice point. Thank you very much. Okay, we can stop here. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Shri Shri Kishore Kishore ki jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani ki jai. Shri Shri Gauranitai ki jai. Shri the Prabhupada ki jai. Vaishnav Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Sarva.